You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In the Western notions of evil, right, especially that thinks of evil as this non-material that's harbored within some irredeemable bad being like the devil that is at war with God, right? The notion of evil is framed by this larger apocalyptic cosmological story of a dualism of good versus evil, where you have these poles that are just going to complete opposite, and one is going to completely win out of the other. And we find ourselves in this cosmological battle of apocalyptic proportions. In indigenous traditions, right, it's not that like there are not bad things, but there's a stronger emphasis that there are not irredeemably bad things. There are not inherently bad things, that everything has a power, everything has an agenda that has to be respected and that you can live in right relationship with. And so things get out of hand when respect isn't given, when things are taken and there's not this reciprocity of things given back. In some way, it really lines up with the family experiences we have, right? Like, my daughter is not irredeemably good or bad, and things are in flow with us when she's properly respecting me when I tell her it's time to go to bed, and when I am also providing food for her, right? There's a harmony in a household that I could tell multiple stories about that reflects, well, this is what life looks like at its best, and it's good, right? It's a really compelling image. And this also invites notions of beauty and of an art to navigating these relationships in a good way that is not always perfect and doesn't have to be perfect, but there are pathways and rituals and ceremonies in place by which then we can restore balance.
Love of life. Spirit unbound, it is the truest form of love that I have found.
Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. I'm your host, John Williamson, and we're back with a new episode. And this is a very unique look than one we've ever taken before, and I'm very, very excited to have this guest on. Before we get to that, though, a couple things. So this will be a part one of a two-parter, and then we will have a two-parter to end this season. Not the end of this year, though. So going to take a month or so off. Obviously, got to start stockpiling new episodes. So I've already got some recorded and some vision for how the fall into winter is going to look. I'm very excited. We're definitely going to tap into some other religions, some other religious practices and holidays and what have you. So very, very excited to bring that forward and to share that with you all. But a couple months off in between now and then, but a few episodes first before I take a slight break, but not really a break. Break for you guys, not really a break for me, but that's okay. But getting those episodes ready to go. This week, though, before we get to the end of the season, got this week, next week, and then the 2 weeks following. And then, like I said, I'll take a short break. Before we get to this week's guest, though, www.thedeconstructionist.com is the main hub for all things relating to this podcast. So you can link to our social media on there. You can send us an email. You can read blog posts on there. Got quite a few new ones within the last 6 months or so. You can visit our web store. We've got some cool t-shirts and pint glasses and coffee mugs on there if you'd like one. And then also you can link to our Patreon. So if you'd like to support the podcast and the costs associated with it, you can do so through there and pick one of the many different packages on there. You can also listen to our entire back catalog of episodes. You can stream them directly from the website. So if you're a technology challenge like my father, you can just click the play button on the front of the website. Very nice. This week's guest brings a different slant to the views of Christianity and interpretation of the Bible. Dr. Christopher Haklatube, he's part of the Choctaw tribe. He teaches courses on the intersection of race, gender, and sexuality in the Christian tradition, the New Testament, Roman religion, Native American spiritualities, world religions, and religion and American politics. He also co-leads interdisciplinary off-campus courses that explore the theme of pilgrimage along El Camino de Santiago in northern Spain, which you guys hopefully remember from our series on the Camino with Dr. Alexander Shaya some years ago now. The topics of ancient philosophy, religion, politics, and archaeology in Greece and Turkey. And he also covers history, art, and culture of North America, indigenous tribes, with art history. His book, Civilized Piety, The Rhetoric of Pietas in the Pastoral Epistles in the Roman Empire, published by Baylor Press in 2017, brings together his research interests in early Christianity, Greco-Roman archaeology, ancient philosophy, and critical theory. Haklatube has also written on Native American interpretations of the Bible, which we talk a lot about on this episode, and the concept of docetism in early Christian studies. He continues to research and write on the pastoral epistles and Native American interpretations of the Bible. So check it out. I've got more information about him and some of the different things he's involved in the show notes. But Chris was just an awesome interview, just a really, really kind guy with a lot of interesting perspectives. We talk a lot about Native American spirituality, which I'll be honest, personally, didn't know a ton about, but was interested in learning a little more. So even more. Obviously, we can't cover everything because there were tons and tons of different Native American tribes within North America, the U.S. and obviously Canada as well, as well as Mexico. I think I covered it all, right? All North America, yes. And so couldn't possibly cover them all because obviously every tribe, had a different level of spirituality and a different type of spirituality and different beliefs. But we're able to cover some in some broad strokes, but I'll provide more resources in the show notes if you want to dive a little bit deeper. So a lot of fun though. With that, I think I mentioned, yes, this is part one of two, and then we will finish off the season with another very exciting guest that I had a ton of fun with, who will be coming back for a future series. But more to come on that a little bit later. If you are a Patreon subscriber, though, you'll get the episode early, so you'll be able to listen to it in its full, uncut, unedited form on the Patreon. So I release those about a week early before part one comes out of all episodes, so you'll have a chance to listen to that early in its full form. I think that's it. Yes. Well, welcome back. Thank you guys so much for listening. Really appreciate all of you who take the time to interact on social media, who send emails, DMs through the different social media accounts, stuff like that. Love to hear from you guys. So appreciate all the support, and hopefully you guys enjoy this. So without further ado, I bring you Dr. Chris freaking Haklatube.
This water I am treading is now my home. So never take what you have for granted. Cause the sea of time is an unfair.
All right, welcome to the podcast. I'm very excited this week to have on my guest, Chris Haklatube. Did I do it?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yes, that's it.
We were just talking about, I'm awful with pronunciation, and so I was trying my best not to completely butcher your last name, but thank you so much for coming on. Really excited. We've never specifically talked about Native American spirituality, so before we get into it, because I'm very excited, tell people a little bit about your background and what you do for a living.
Yeah. So my name, again, is Chris Hocklow Tubby. I am a member of the Chata Nation, zooming in right now, or actually recording in from Iowa, which was the ancestral land of the Bahoki, or the Iowa people, along with Lakota Sioux and the Meskwaki Nation, and a number of other tribes have called this land home. I'm originally from Southern California. My grandfather made it out from Oklahoma, around southeast region of Oklahoma, where the Chata have their their new land. Our people were originally from Mississippi. And, I wasn't raised in an indigenous community, but over the last few years have found myself living and working and befriending a number of indigenous communities, primarily through my role with NAITS, an Indigenous Learning Community. I am the Director of Graduate Studies, and NAITS is, and I'm proud to say, the first accredited indigenous designed, developed, and delivered Christian seminary. It has a number of founders who are kind of the who's who's of people who have been thinking about the intersection of indigenous spirituality and Christianity, including Uncle Terry LeBlanc and Ray Aldred and Randy Woodley, Casey Church, Richard Twiss, and our current director, Sherry Russell, Cheryl Bear, and many, many, many others, Wendy Peterson. So on that note, I wanted to identify the relationships and communities that have formed me and that I'm continuing to learn from in this pathway. I identify as someone who was raised in the evangelical conservative culture, and in some ways those evangelical elements are still within me. I would otherwise say I'm a progressive Christian, but in a process and walking down a journey to think about what it means to revitalize indigenous practices and philosophies and ways of looking in my own life. And so, there are a number of other people who are doing this. Caitlin Curtis, I will shout out to her work right now, who wrote Native and has another book that just came out, thinking about daily acts of resistance as an indigenous woman, and many others. And so I will note that the indigenous experience is multifaceted. We could talk about the urban indigenous experience, to those who live on reservations. And, I say all this, and thank you for giving me time to say all this, because I note that I come from a very particular perspective, and one that I hope to be a bridge builder to your audience, because that your audience seems to be my background as well. But as I'm journeying along and learning from so many people who have walked this path and who have been raised in indigenous communities and have something to say about indigenous spirituality, and also have critique Christian perspectives from these positions of indigenous spirituality. I hope to share some stories of what I've been learning along this way. And my final note I should do is, what has also been taking me along this journey is, I'm currently writing a book that is funded by the Louisville Institute and is under contract with InterVarsity Press, tentatively titled Reading the Bible on Turtle Island, Indigenous Interpretations of the Bible in North America. And I'm co-writing this with my Cree brother, Danny Zacharias, who's also a Native First Nations New Testament scholar. So both him and I are unicorns in the field of biblical studies. There's not very many members who have PhDs in biblical studies who are also members of indigenous tribes. So with this funding, I and he have been traveling around Canada, the United States, meeting with indigenous elders and leaders and thinking about both indigenous interpretations of the Bible, but also broad conversations of indigenous spirituality and indigenous worldviews.
Yeah, I think that's the most fascinating piece of it all, is I had no idea there was this sort of subset of study within Native American populations. And it's curious to me, as someone with a background in history, you know, I think we have to be honest and say that the sort of European conquest of specifically North America was oftentimes brutal, and resulted in a lot of death and Native Americans being pushed off of their land and kind of shoved into in some cases these undesirable pieces of land out west. And so it's kind of interesting to me from a historical perspective that these kind of white Europeans who are predominantly Christian and are doing these horrific things to the native peoples, that anybody from the native populations would be at all interested in Christianity. So talk about how those two kind of came head to head throughout history.
You know, you've put your finger on a central tension of the work I'm doing, the work that Nate's has been doing. And these are certainly stories that we want our students to be very familiar with. The Bible indigenous people did not have the greatest introduction to the Bible in North America, right? First, you have the conquistadors coming through looking for gold and producing a kind of Catholicism by the sword and missionizing people. And of course, there's a complex history to the different kinds of, missionizing strategies that these conquistadors had along with the Jesuits and others, Jesuits being a little bit more humane in their approach and trying to build relationship and maintain indigenous pathways in their understanding of Christianity. Not all, but many, and it's a complex narrative, but you also have the enslavement and forced labor of indigenous people in missions up across the West Coast, from California, where I'm at. And then on the North American, more North American side, right, you've got the Puritans and Jamestown. And, you think about why do people come to America and the story that we tell ourselves, right? It's always selective, right? We talk about this pure Christian mission to come to America, and we identify with the Puritans, right? And a kind of national story that a number of people tell about the founding of America. But Jamestown is just as old, if not older, than the Puritans and Pilgrims coming along. And in some ways, that very much represents the American story of coming and not building right relationships with the indigenous people in a productive way, and coming expressly for gold, right? In many ways, I mean, we could critique this movie Pocahontas, right? But that opening song that slaps about mine, 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 that Radcliffe sings. Yeah. I show this to my class on religion, American politics, and this is like, this captures a lot of that spirit, right? This doctrine of discovery spirit that any land that's inhabited by indigenous people, because they are not Christians, can just be possessed and can be taken and extracted from and utilized for the sake of benefiting some at the expense of others. And as we think about, as the we, I mean, a number of indigenous people thinking about what does it look like to revitalize or decolonize our worldviews, right? It's to move away from this idea of land as property, to move away from this idea that space territory is here for the extraction of minerals for wealth to better ourselves. And that also comes with this assumption that humans are intrinsically better than or superior to all other creatures. So an indigenous worldview, it is suffused with non-human persons. There are all kinds of other persons out there that may not be humans, but it is our responsibility as humans to live in right relationship with all of creation, with everything that abounds. And this comes across in a number of indigenous stories that we tell that that you could compare across the region. And again, I use we with scarecrows, right? Because there's no singular indigenous we. There are a lot of things that we could talk about that a lot of indigenous communities share across regions, but indigenous peoples are just as particular and different as the landscape around them. And we can talk about that, but you know, that you know, the land shapes the stories, right? If you are relying upon salmon are going to be really important in the stories you tell about your relationship to the world versus those that live in swamps or forests like the Chota originally did. So all that to say, though, in a number of these creation stories, it's animals that are created first, and humans are oftentimes the pitiful ones. Animals take pity on the humans that are dumb and can't survive apart from them. And there are a number of stories where animals, feeling so much pity for humans, they counsel together and they say, you know what, we should allow some of these humans to hunt us and to eat of us so that they could survive. There is a, related to this, right, there is this Cherokee story where the animals are so angry with the humans for overhunting and overkilling them that the bears basically, in council with the earthworm and others, come up with this idea that they should get humans sick, and they invent sickness this way. And so the humans are dying because they can't survive the new kinds of illnesses that are coming from. And then the plants take pity on these humans, and the plants provide a council together, and they bring the animals together and say, look, can we work in a new way, a new system here where we can have more harmony rather than just see these pitiful humans die out from existence? They have a place here too. And so the plants show themselves to Cherokee medicine men in dreams and visions and show them, here, this is how you can make use of us to heal the sicknesses that you have. But remember, as you use us, you have to show us respect, and you have to live in harmony with everything around you. And so, you know, a core principle that this all ties into is this notion of harmony and living in right relationship with all these non-human persons that you need to maintain balance with. So I realize I've taken a number of different trails in these stories, because as I'm telling one story, it leads to another story, which all comes around to other virtues that I want to point out to. But in some ways, right, this nonlinear conversation, right, is also a virtue of indigenous culture and storytelling, right? That we see things in circles. We see things as branching out from one another and not just something that's so organized and static and stoic going through this. I have had a lot to learn from my elders in this community, but it has been so rich. So your audience doesn't get lost, right? We've talked about the relationality of things. We've talked about the importance of harmony and balance. And we could talk about, again, if we want to take a rabbit trail from there, right? Differences of harmony between Western notions of sin and evil, and how you think about the world and the stories you tell about the world. And all of this came from talking about the pre-colonial contact and notions that indigenous people had before conquest, right? Of seeing land as property, not as person, or thing that is not even thing, but yeah, as person. I'm going to pause there because I want to hear what stories you want me to tell more about.
No, that's such a great way to kick it off. I think I think one important thing to note is that from a historical view, I think more recent historians have come to the conclusion that, hey, you know, it wasn't just this sparsely populated country of tribes here and there, but rather millions upon millions of native peoples who were living in kind of sort of a network of interconnected communities across the country. And much in the same way that we have states and our own separate sort of traditions in these pockets of the country, that was true for the native peoples as well. And so, of course, with that, you know, you would expect, as you said, to see slightly varying traditions when it comes to their spirituality. But one of the things I think was really neat that you got into, and this is one of the, I think, important things to note, is just the nature of their relationship with the world around them. It seems to be one that is more heavily focused on the kind of interconnectedness of the universe and just this respect and reverence for nature and, you know, as you said, the animals and plants and things in a way that sort of is lost within sort of the traditional Christian community. Because, I mean, obviously now, you know, we're a lot of, you know, big issues are like climate change and taking better care of the planet and not over hunting and overfishing populations. But that seems to be something that the Native American people were very akinly in tune with.
Yes. And I will say that it's not that even these principles come easy for any indigenous person, right? We just like love doesn't come easy for Christians. Like we say this is really important and value, this is part of our community, but it takes work and it takes training and then passing down and seeing it modeled. You know, one thing that oftentimes gets projected upon indigenous people, right, is, well, they're all just these, they're worshiping nature, right? They're worshiping the sun, they're worshiping trees, and that's really not quite it. In some ways, they share indigenous respect for nature, respect for the world, shares some resonances with Catholic perspectives of venerating and recognizing the saints as available members, as persons, right, who are available, who are present, who are distinct from a different kind of higher power, right? The world is suffused with all these kinds of beings that we are in relationship with. And I don't know where I saw this, but there was a TV show that mentioned that what is love but paying attention?
Mm.
And it is part of an indigenous worldview that the way in which we love and are in right relationship with the things around us is to pay attention to it, to pay attention to the stream, to the animals, to our lawns, to the forest, right? And that in this paying attention, we are showing love and we are showing gratitude to the world around us. And it's such a richer way to walk around, to see the world as something to be loved, to something that is loving us, that we are in relationship with. And we see this in indigenous practices of harvesting. When you take and gather medicinal leaves from plants, right, you just don't take it and just walk away without any kind of consideration or intention. And so a number of indigenous people, right, as they gather sacred herbs or even gather and extract from plants, right, there's this intention of, well, I'm not going to take all of this because this plant still needs these leaves to live. I'm also not going to over-harvest without some kind of gift, and I'm going to provide some tobacco, right? And I'm going to bury that in there as a sign of respect and as an acknowledgement. And we don't need to get into the entire ontology of what effect happens, but I will say from a personal effect, right, from a personal stance that you just it forms this just level of appreciation. And whatever you appreciate, just whatever you say thank you to, there's just this overwhelming good feeling that happens in us as humans as we show gratitude and respect. And indigenous people don't have the monopoly on the power of gratitude and appreciation, right? But there is something magical in any of these moments. And so I think indigenous life ways and practices are attuned to that and have tried to expand that broadly to the world we interact with every day. And, you know, to audiences out there, I pose this challenge of would it be like in your life as you're gardening to thank the tree for the shade it's providing you, and to thank the strawberries that you're harvesting from your small gathering. You know, someone who puts this in such beautiful language, and probably is one of the best books I've read this past decade is Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass. And she does have this wonderful chapter of thanking the strawberries and thanking her garden and her and thinking about, you know, does my garden love me? It's just beautiful. And so you can love other things without falling into quote unquote idolatry. Right. And I think there's a lot of hand wringing in there. Right. The same way I don't say like, or have any kind of anxiety when I tell my wife or my daughters that I love them and I appreciate them. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I've diminished the honor and glory of the creator by telling my family that I love them. Right. Or other people, I love them. There's more things to love. There's more persons to love out there that enriches one's life and experience of the world.
Yeah. And it just kind of, it kind of reflects on this idea that we see God's divine image everywhere around us, you know, and God being God's divine image or the love of God, you know, manifesting in all things around us. And yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to look at things. One of the things that I think is really interesting, we did a series years ago. Gosh, it feels like last year, but it was probably like 6 years ago now. But we did a really cool series where we kind of highlighted a few different religions. And one of the things we've really tried to press upon in our podcast is just this idea that there's beauty to be found in other traditions beyond Christianity, and educating ourselves is a good thing, you know, and our understanding our brothers and sisters a little bit more, you know, who practice other faith traditions. And one of the things that was really eye-opening for me, and I'll admit my ignorance in this, is I read this really great book by Stephen Prothero, who's going to come on later in this series, who wrote a book called God Is Not One. Mm-hmm. And kind of bucking against this notion that all religions ultimately have the same end goal. And I thought, I've never thought about that before, you know? And so, like, you know, within Christianity, we know salvation is a big piece of it, you know, and getting into heaven and battling against sin and all this stuff. But that's not necessarily the main focal point for other world religions. So, and you kind of mentioned this at the top a little bit, like, so what would you say, broadly speaking, is kind of the outlook on, or the main end goal for Native American spirituality and ultimately their view on sin and evil? Because sin and evil really is like a major focal point for Christians, right? We worry about this all the time.
Yeah. Well, tell Stephen I say hi. I actually have in hand his book right now, his textbook called Religion Matters, and I'm about to teach it next week to my undergraduates in my world religion class. So,
oh, that's awesome.
I'm really excited to dig into it. I've even had a student read it and say, this is the best textbook I've read on this. So I'm excited to introduce it for the first time.
Oh, that's great.
So I was just flipping through his chapter on this, and it's funny because he, instead of teaching global indigenous traditions and religions from, you know, bird's eye view, he sits with the Navajo tribe or the Diné and thinks precisely through this problem of how they work it out, right? And the way in which Navajo work this out and see the problem, I would say, can be expanded, can be seen in a lot of indigenous communities, right? And the problem is that things are out of balance, that things are not in right relationship. And in some ways, right, eventually, I don't want to say that this is comparable to evil, because in the Western notions of evil, right, especially that thinks of evil as this non-material that's harbored within some irredeemable bad being like the devil that is at war with God, right? The notion of evil is framed by this larger apocalyptic cosmological story of a dualism of good versus evil, where you have these poles that are just going to complete opposite and one is going to completely win out of the other. And we find ourselves in this cosmological battle of apocalyptic proportions. In indigenous traditions, right, it's not that like there are not bad things, but there's a stronger emphasis that there are not irredeemably bad things. There are not inherently bad things, that everything has a power. Everything has an agenda that has to be respected and that you can live in right relationship with. And so things get out of hand when respect isn't given, when things are taken and there's not this reciprocity of things given back. In some way, it really lines up with the family experiences we have, right? Like, my daughter is not irredeemably good or bad. And things are in flow with us when she's properly respecting me when I tell her it's time to go to bed. And when I am also providing food for her, right? There's a harmony in a household that I can tell multiple stories about that reflects, well, this is what life looks like at its best, and it's good, right? It's a really compelling image. And this also invites notions of beauty and of an art to navigating these relationships in a good way that is not always perfect and doesn't have to be perfect, but there are pathways and rituals and ceremonies in place by which then we can restore balance. And there's oftentimes, and we think about this in our own lives, right? Where being a parent, there's a work-life balance. And to make money and to be competitive, you are going to focus on your job. Or right now, I have two jobs, one at Cornell College and Nates, right? And that's going to take me away from my obligations with my daughters. And that can exist out of balance for a while. But if that exists out of balance and disharmony for too much, I'm going to curse my daughters for years on the therapy couch for an absentee dad, right?
Yeah.
And that is going to have long-lasting ramifications. And so tomorrow we're going to take them to a water park, right? We're going to do these quote-unquote ceremonies, right, to attend to them, to love to them, right, and to restore that balance. And so you take this family analogy, and I think we apply this to an indigenous mindset to, you know, well, there are other persons we have to think about. We have to think about the earth. We have to think about the deer. We have to think about the animals that we harvest, the bison, right? We just can't over-harvest the bison, but we live in relationship to the bison that provide us hides, that make our houses, that we use every part of the bison, right? Because we have taken a life, and to disrespect that life would be to casually take one part of the bison and throw it away, right? But because this life is a dignified life, it's a life that has meaning and had meaning, we are going to do right by this death that has just resulted. So, you know, the problem again is living out of balance in the multiple ways and in the multiple possible relationships that one can live out of balance with. And when oneself is not in balance, it's not this apocalyptic do or die. Sometimes, you know, stakes can be high, but that there are pathways to restoring balance. And that is the place of indigenous ceremonies, right? Whether it is in Lakota tradition, in a lot of Plains traditions, you have these sweat lodges, or you have ceremonies that honor the salmon or the bison that become opportunities to thank and be grateful for the bison and for the salmon. Or if there are ceremonies around green corn festivals and other plant and vegetations, right, to be thankful to the earth, to recognize our appreciation for the land, right, that it's restoring our relationship to a number of beings and persons that flood and suffuse the world around us.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I love that. I just think there's so many things to learn from the Native American traditions, because I think we could do a better job of probably, looking at that disharmony or that unbalanced relationship that we have with the earth, with animals, with all those sorts of things. And then also there's power in ritual, as you said. You know, we have our own for sure, but I think over time you kind of see a loss of the power of ritual. And I remember reading some Joseph Campbell back in the day, and Campbell even talking about the notion that even as far back as like the 70s and 80s, that ritual is kind of a lost thing. But it is okay if you don't want to follow the old rituals, but then you need to create new ones in their place. So I like this idea of, being intentional.
And, coming from an evangelical Protestant tradition, right? Like, I was raised to be very suspicious of rituals, right? It's about relationship with Jesus. And if you're feeling like your life is in disorder, right? It's just, you just have to have faith more. You have to pray more, it didn't create room for a kind of sense of answering that feeling. I think a lot of humans have that life is in disorder, that life is out of balance. And how do I restore that balance, or how do I feel clean? Right? I mean, baptism wasn't this kind of one and done thing in a lot of religious traditions, even in Christianity, right? In the Qumran communities communities that are associated with the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? Like, there were these washings that would happen all the time because there was this innate feeling that you have to be clean as you are going to worship Jesus, or not worship Jesus, I'm sorry, but worship the God of Israel, or to perform these things. And it makes sense in certain societies. I see this in an early story told among the Muscogee Creek people of how their people arrived into the East Coast, right? It's because they were following the sun, which they interpreted to be the cleanest thing out there, and they wanted to be clean too. And as they followed the sun to the ocean, and they saw it come up from the ocean, from the water, right? This inspired them to think of their own water rituals that provide the sense of cleaning, of restoring, right? And they just own it, and they're intentional about it, right? And I think there's a ways in which even evangelicals and non-religious people participate daily in their life in these kinds of cleansing rituals, but they wouldn't identify or tend to it, right? You think about my wife and I are like this way, like having a clean home. Like if I'm stressed about a project or a paper I have to write, like I will make sure my office is in order. I will make sure the chairs are in line, right? That there is some order in my house, so metaphysically, right, that I feel like, okay, I am in a good or lucky place, that my world is in order, that I can tend to this. Or whether we feel like, man, I've done something wrong, I need to like take a shower, right? And this even is primed in our humans, right? Daniel Kahneman talks about social science experiments in Thinking Fast and Slow, that if you prime someone and talk about you talk about moral evil or something like that, and then you give them this fill in the word, right? And the word is S-O-blank-P, right? People will just be like associate. Their mind just jumps. We are associative machines, and we think with about soap. And this is across traditions, right? That there's this sense of that we think about some picture, we need to do something to clean ourselves when we have done something wrong, right? And what are the ceremonies in our life, whether we identify them as ceremonies or rituals, right? What do we do in our lives to make ourselves feel clean? And indigenous people have been innovators and geniuses. I mean, there's wisdom in this, right? That, again, they have ceremonies in place. And this, again, will just differentiate between a Western individualist view and a communityist view. And this is a term I pull from my friend Tinker, who has done a lot of work and writing on indigenous worldviews and perspectives as opposed to a Euro-American perspective, right? But a communityist view that's not just up to you to determine that you're clean, right? But that this is identified, done alongside of others, and seen and recognized by others. And again, there's some wisdom in this. And even as a scholar, right, participating in Western society, right, I need community to recognize that, like, what I've written is of value, right? And there's many ways in which, you know, I could write a book or write an article, and my wife says, oh, that's great, right? My mom says, oh, that's wonderful. It's like, well, your opinion doesn't matter. It matters. What I need is a review from someone I've never met and have no relationship with to say, oh, that's a good book, and then I'll feel like whole, right? But even that touches on this idea that, you know, like if a tree falls in the wood and knows it hears it, did the tree fall? But in the same way, like, if you're clean or if you've gone through some ritual thing, it's not validated, right, by a community, or it's not seen and it's not attended to, right? Attention given by a community, loved by a community. What substance and meaning does that really have?
These walls and I found a business where the company line was the only way. Uncertainty that fears everything against it. Where the refugee suffers and the white man has it made. I won't do it anymore. It's taken me. Myself in your pews every single week, and I gave you my money so that you would tell me what to think, and I learned from a book that you had taken the heart out.
Accept
take a while to wade through the fear and the hurt. But I think there's a way for us to love and heal the world.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.